This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Created equal.
Welcome to Created Equal. I'm Stephen Henderson here at WDET. Detroit, Michigan is ground zero, or maybe ground one or two, for a really ambitious Democratic experience. Voters here said in 2018 that rather than having politicians draw political lines, we wanted the people themselves to do it. And that's what happened in 2021. The Independent Voter Redistricting Commission actually sat down and figured out how to divide voters in the state up according to legislative and congressional lines. But a court recently ruled that the process used to draw those new political lines violated the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, which prohibits discrimination based on race. So our experiment is now taking a really urgent turn, just as voters are getting ready to cast ballots here in 2024. 13 districts have to be redrawn around Metro Detroit, which of course means lots more districts will have to change as well. There's no question that it is a bit chaotic, but the commissioners who draw the lines have been at work for a bit now, and they have some ideas of how to fix this. The big question, though, is what will the effect of that fix be? Will it create districts that are more likely or easier to elect African Americans to the state legislature? Something that we saw really take a nosedive after the original maps were drawn. And also, what about geography? Will these maps respect more of the municipal lines that old lines used to be drawn according to, but that the new rules say shouldn't be so much of an influence? It's a bit of a natural tension, really, between the idea of making sure that people can elect people who look like them to represent them in Lansing, and to make sure that people are voting in districts with people they live near. That's where we want to begin the conversation here on Created Equal. What should be the criteria for drawing these lines? And we want to hear from you. What would you use? Geography or race? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag WDET, and we will be able to include you in the conversation that way. But to get us started, we've got a great guest who has been paying really rapt attention to not just this process of redrawing, but was, I think, one of the keenest observers of the process in the first place, that exercise in 2021 to draw maps among citizens rather than politicians. Ben Solis is a reporter with Gongwer News Service. Ben, welcome to Created Equal.
Hello, Stephen. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So I want to start with a really, really simple explanation of what's happening. These commissioners were told that the maps that they drew originally weren't sufficient, didn't meet the standards of the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. So they went back into a room to start over. Where do they start? I mean, I can't imagine coming back to that table after all of this time, after we had a round of elections, and saying, okay, we have to do this differently. Give us a sense of how that process works. Where do you start rethinking something of this magnitude?
Yeah, that is a good question. They were told primarily that they cannot go back to the drawing board and draw based on race, which is what got them in the predicament that they're in the first place. So their attorneys, the commissioners, their consultants, all kind of got together and figured out a way to do this without that consideration. Well, the interesting thing is that they have a whole lot of considerations to choose from.
Right.
It wasn't that they, you know, were kind of left out in the water because they could not draw according to race. So, you know, they focused heavily on going back to the core constitutional criteria that they were tasked with in the first place. Equal plot population, making sure that communities of interest were considered and kept together if possible. You know, trying to build maps that did respect some neighborhood and city lines. So in this case, we only had one city to really worry about, but there are also, you know, communities outlying in Dearborn, other areas in Oakland nearby that also needed to be accounted for. One of the main reasons why they got in the situation that they're in, aside from just drawing by race, is that, you know, they roped in so many communities outside of Detroit mm-hmm. into Detroit districts. That was pretty appalling to a lot of Detroit residents and clearly concerning to the court because, you know, they got ordered to go back and draw. So that was really the focus is, you know, go back to what is the core of our constitutional criteria that we have to draw with. The caveat is that, you know, the U.S. Voting Rights Act and compliance with the U.S. Voting Rights Act is a federal law. Mm-hmm. They need to comply with federal law. But it's also the second ranked criterion in their constitutional criteria. So no matter what, they were eventually going to have to grapple with the VRA. The problem is that the court very clearly told them, we do not want you thinking about race at all when you go back to redraw these lines. And we don't want you to even use considerations of the VRA at all, because that seems how you kind of walked yourself into the problem that you have now.
Yeah.
So that's what they did. They spent weeks just trying to do that.
So, you know, there's a real tension there that I want to talk just a little about. This idea of respecting the 14th Amendment, which says, look, you can't discriminate on the basis of race. I mean, that was a very significant milestone in our country's history in 1867, just after the Civil War, deciding that that was the way we were going to do things. But then, of course, the Voting Rights Act, which is passed in 1965, says, look, we've got to take real action to make sure that black voters in particular are not left out of the process of line drawing and packed into districts where they can't have the influence that they should or cracked in ways that that prevent them from electing people who look like them. And there's a struggle between those two. Why did the court say, look, the 14th Amendment is the thing that you got to pay attention to here, and for now at least, don't pay attention to the Voting Rights Act?
Say that one more time, Stephen. You cut out. I apologize.
Yeah, that's okay. Why did the court say that the 14th Amendment is the thing that they need to be paying attention to here rather than the Voting Rights Act? There's this tension between those two things, but don't you have to follow both?
Yeah, no, you certainly do. And I think that one of the main issues was that when you saw the commission get sued for multiple things, this was really the lawsuit that did it. There were VRA claims in this lawsuit, but they didn't survive. And the 14th Amendment is really where the court, you know, stuck the tack in and saying, you know, this is the problem. It's an interesting interplay because you do have to consider the racial makeup of these districts. It's hard to build these lines without that, and it's hard to give, you know, the key opportunity districts that you know, I think the court is looking for here when they do analyze the VRA. You've got to make sure that there's an opportunity to elect in these districts. But at the same time, you know, if you don't, you know, draw these maps in a way that is not, I don't want to say race blind, but, mm-hmm. you know, not primarily considering race, I mean, then that violates the 14th Amendment. So, yeah, it was always going to conflict. And I think that's one of the things that the commission grappled with the first time, is because they were really conflicted on how this was all going to relate to the actual geography, but also the communities that they were going to wrap in. I mean, it is a heavy experiment, no matter, you know, who you bring into the table. Having average citizens kind of grapple with this was difficult. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that was always a piece of this that was going to be tough.
So I want to talk a little more about what the commissioners did in the first place that ran afoul of the federal court. Their approach was to create districts that stretched across municipal boundaries that, at least historically, have been respected in the line drawing process. So, for instance, the city of Detroit, 8 Mile Road, which is the northern border, and Telegraph Road, which is the western border, those have been really hard borders in political line drawing, right? People don't stretch across those lines in the way that they represent voters. But on this new map, they did, right? They drew several districts in ways that stretched into Oakland or Macomb or outside of Detroit in Wayne County. And they did that in part because demographically, the racial makeup of this region has changed. There are a lot more African Americans in the suburbs now than there are in the past, and there are actually more African Americans in the suburbs than there are in the city. And so the idea was to create these districts that would give African American voters in both the city and the suburbs equal chance, really, to elect someone who looked like them. Of course, that didn't happen in 2022. What we saw was that white candidates won overwhelmingly in those districts. So what is it that I guess the commissioners go back to at this point? Is it to say we're not going to draw districts that cross those lines? We're not going to cross those borders. We're not going to try to create these new communities. Is the approach about really going backward, I guess, in the sense of respecting those old lines?
It's tough to say, too, because, you know, you bring up a really salient point, is that there is a bit of a diaspora. I don't think, however, the commission in the first round grappled with that so much. Uh-huh. One of the things that got them wrapped up in this lawsuit was that their original advice from their attorneys was to, you know, unpack Detroit's districts. One of the things that they observed was that, you know, for years and years, decades, Detroit had fairly packed, and when I say packed, I mean jammed with black voting age population. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their attorneys did note that, you know, this is a VRA violation. You know, it was never raised by anyone. There's a lot of speculation onto why that is. A lot of people have surmised that because this process was originally vested with the legislature, that, you know, Democrats and Republicans could come together at least to some degree, even though Republicans controlled that process, they controlled the legislature at the time, that they could, you know, kind of bargain for the districts that they wanted. And in that, you know, scenario, Detroit got really packed districts that, you know, kind of almost ensured black representation to a certain degree.
But it also assured Detroit representation, right? I mean, yeah, it also made sure that Detroit was going to have the majority of those black seats, but also of Democratic seats in some cases here in Southeast Michigan.
Yeah, no, exactly. So, you know, that was part and parcel to that whole construct of, you know, let's bargain for this, we'll get what we want, and we'll see where it lands. Now that this, you know, has been taken out of their hands, you know, it's been tough for, I think, Detroit representatives, Detroit residents to watch how they're considering those lines. So if you go back to this packing scenario, they worked really hard to try to unpack Detroit, try to lower the black voting age population in some of these districts in order to try to balance this out. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, when they did that, they reduced those levels really, really to a low level. The original kind of benchmark was to get it down below 50%. In some of those districts, they started out at 35%. They worked to raise that up a little bit higher, but at the end of the day, we saw, all these, communities outside of Detroit, north of 8 Mile, as you mentioned, wrapped into these districts. And I think that was one of the biggest problems. While they didn't get dinged for the VRA, they didn't get dinged for that, manipulation of the population mm-hmm. in that area, if you want to call it that. The fact is that no matter how they drew those lines with those other communities wrapped in, it really, decimated the ability to elect black candidates of choice in those key districts. And when you're talking about Detroit, we're talking about Detroit representation, having people from Detroit represent those districts. That caused a problem because now you're, roping in these outside communities.
Yeah. Okay, we need to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to continue talking with Ben Sillies of Gangwon News about the redistricting process, right? The redrawing of new lines here in Metro Detroit, just in months, really, ahead of the balloting that we will be doing in 2024. We want to get going with you, the listeners, as well, on the phones and on social. Call and tell us, how would you draw political lines here in Southeast Michigan? Would you use cities like Detroit or Royal Oak or Oak Park as boundaries? Or would you really try to create districts of opportunity for African Americans that maybe stretch across municipal lines, but give a better chance or some chance of African American representation outside the city of Detroit? When we come back, we're going to talk about what the commissioners are looking at, specifically what their proposed maps to fix this problem look like. We want to hear from you as well. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag WDET, and we can work you into the conversation that way. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson. I'm really glad you've joined us. We're talking today about redistricting, which we are doing in a mad scramble right now here in the state of Michigan to redraw a bunch of lines that a federal court says don't comply with the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, which bans discrimination on the basis of race. Ben Sillies, who is a reporter with Gangwon News, has been following this process really closely. He's with us talking about what the commissioners on the Independent Redistricting Commission are doing. What are they looking at? How are they trying to fix what the courts say they got wrong? We also really want to hear from you, the listeners. How closely are you following all of this drama around the redistricting commission, around these districts in Detroit? We are about to go to the ballot box several times this year to choose legislators and members of Congress, and later we'll choose a president. Are you thinking about the district that you live in and what it says about where you live? How well do you feel represented by the districts that were drawn in 2021 and that we voted in 2022? Are you someone who's worried about racial representation in that analysis? Are you worried about geographic representation in that analysis? And why or how would you draw the lines? Would you respect geography? Would you respect the idea that we need to make sure that African Americans can elect people who look like us to the legislature and to Congress? What standard do you think we should be using? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag WDET, and we can work you into the conversation. So, Ben, I want to start right now talking about specifically what the commissioners have come up with. They have, I understand, 10 draft maps that they are working with, and they are going to invite members of the public to come and talk to them about those maps and take in that public comment, and then I guess, decide which ones they're gonna use. Give us a sense of the range of possibilities here. We talked before about the difficulty of starting from scratch and rethinking all of this. What did the commissioners come up with on these draft maps, and how are they different, really, from what we already have, which the court says is in violation of the Constitution?
Yeah, certainly. So they have 9 collaborative maps. One of them is an individual map put forward by a particular commissioner, and about 3 or 4 of them check off all the boxes of their constitutional criteria, but 4 of them do comply with the U.S. Voting Rights Act. The others simply do not, which is unfortunate because, you know, we are going to see these maps all go out to public comment, and it's possible that the public might like one of these maps that is not in compliance with the VRA. And if that's the case, then they have to go back and tinker again. But based on what they have maps that are similar in partisan fairness numbers to the map that was adopted in 2021. So, you know, that's very similar. Some of the maps that I think the commissioners like more in particular were ones where they tried to lock off, and I use that as a jargony term, in the mapping process, they kind of froze some of the outlier districts, the districts that did not appear in the court's order. So they had to redraw 7 of them. And the goal for those maps was to try to make sure that we don't make as many changes as possible,
right,
as few changes as possible, to other districts. And that was a fear I think a lot of other people had, was, okay, we're going to get these districts in Detroit redrawn, but how is it going to affect the map? So they worked hard to try to make sure that those outlying changes were minimized. You know, when we look at these maps, we do see a much more Detroit-centric focus.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, does this go back to having, you know, exclusively Detroit districts or exclusively suburban districts?
It's better than what they had. I mean, if you want to use that as a subjective marker, and, you know, the court gave them a pretty clear marker on what they needed to do. There's some, you know, representatives who are losing some of their, you know, outlying representation. Some of those districts, I believe it was like 5 and 6, District 5 and 6, which were not a part of the court's order, but then did get affected by these changes. No longer in some of these configurations reach out past 8 Mile as they did previously. I think in one of the iterations, District 5 and 6, which is north of, or some of which is north of 8 Mile, mm-hmm, are now solely north of 8 Mile districts. They lost a lot of their Detroit representation. So, you know, you are seeing kind of a downward push, if you will, to get some of these districts below 8 Mile, east of Telegraph, to make sure that they're more contained back into those lines that you mentioned earlier that usually were kind of sacrosanct and saying, hey, we're not going to cross them.
Yeah.
So you do see a lot of that in some of these maps. And in a weird way, a lot of these maps are like iterations of each other, if you will. You know, they started off a certain way. The commission did some work to change some of those lines and then ended up with a whole nother map. And I think one of the things is, too, is we're not really quite sure what the court needs from them.
Right.
They need a map. They need a functioning map. But the commission was really focused on, let's do as much as we possibly can. Let's give the you know, the public commenters, the residents of Detroit, people who are interested in this, as many options as we possibly can, even if they're shades of each other, to get a good sense on what we need to do. It's very possible that in this public comment period that the public will like the maps that they like the most, that their attorneys like the most, and everything's hunky-dory. We move forward and we move that map to the court. But, you know, we don't know, and that could get kind of sticky because, you know, they might have to make some more changes to maps that they felt, you know, pretty comfortable with.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're seeing a lot of those shifts happening. I think that they were acutely aware that, you know, Detroit was the focus, giving residents of Detroit representation, doing that in a way that creates these more, you know, I guess they were always compact districts, but, you know, these more concentrated districts in Detroit was going to be the way to get out of it. But then, you know, also there were some pretty packed districts in some of these iterations too. So, you know, that could raise some red flags from the VRA standpoint. Yeah. But that's not what they're there to fix.
Yeah, so. Yeah. You know, you point out that the court didn't say what it wanted from the commission. All it said was you relied too much on race the first time, and it actually didn't comment on the outcome of this, the maps themselves. There was a challenge that was made to the maps on the basis of the Voting Rights Act that said that the maps themselves were the problem and that they violated the Voting Rights Act. The court didn't rule on that. And so it does leave them in a little bit of a sticky position, right? I mean, there is a lot of guesswork, I guess, that has to go into this.
Yeah, certainly. That was a big issue that the commission had when they finally got back together after the court had ruled. There was another hearing that followed that ruling where their attorneys were kind of, you know, going back and forth on what this would look like. I think at the end of that hearing, the court, the three-judge panel that made this decision, essentially just looked at it and said, like, it's clear. Our order is clear. Don't draw with race in mind. Mm-hmm. Do everything else but that. And what does that look like, though? And, you know, it's a good question. And I think that when they finally got back to the drawing board, the real, you know, silver bullet here was, let's just go back to our constitutional criteria. The Constitution gives us, at least to some degree, some pretty clear outline on what we need to do. Let's do all of that without race and see where we go. Again, that took a couple of weeks worth of grappling, even before they even put lines down on a map on what that would look like.
Yeah.
And we'll probably get to this later, but, you know, in order to meet the VRA, they're eventually going to have to consider race, and they did have to consider race eventually. So when it got to that stage of it, the commissioners were really, really uncomfortable. Some of them were very wary that this was even happening again. So, yeah, there was a very tightrope walk that they had to navigate in order to figure out how the court wanted them to draw these lines.
Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Call and let us know what you think of this process of redrawing the political lines here in Metro Detroit just ahead of the 2024 elections that will take place starting in the spring. If you were the person with the pen in your hand and a piece of paper and a map in front of you, how would you draw the lines? Would you think about geography? Would you think about political party? Or would you think more about race? And how would you balance those things? How do you think we ought to be balancing those things to make sure that people have the representation that they want? 313-577-1019 is the number. You can also go to Twitter and @WDET or #WDET, and we can include you in the conversation. I want to read a quick comment from a caller, Ben. Rob from Farmington couldn't stay on the line, but he had a really interesting question. He says, what do we think about using AI to draw these maps? In other words, you know, something like ChatGPT, which would have to be adapted, I think, in the application. Why not let a computer do this? Now, I'm going to turn it over to you, Ben, and have you explain how they do this. But first, I'm going to say that I know that for years now, they have been using really sophisticated computer software to generate these lines, and it takes in an incredible range of information about people, where they live, how they vote, even things like how they shop. I mean, there is a really sophisticated set of algorithms and other tools that they use to draw these maps. But you know, AI maybe takes that to a different level. I mean, makes something even more radical possible. I wonder if they've talked about the possibility of even using that as an aid in the process.
Well, first and foremost, they have not talked about that. That would have been an interesting conversation, and I probably would have written a couple of stories about that as well. but, you know, the Constitution does not allow for computers or AI. to do that.
To make those decisions, right. Yeah.
To make those decisions. I mean, this was handed back to the people, if you want to, call it that, handed back to average folk who would come together on a commission and make these decisions as representatives of the state. There were, I guess, some considerations in the beginning of, do we plot all these lines? Do our consultants plot all these lines? And I think that the general consensus was the Constitution and the people who voted for this, change put us in charge, and we have to really, for better or worse, take up that that charge. If the voters of Michigan want to amend the Constitution to allow for AI to do that, I'm sure that they can. If that's something that they want the commission to do, I'm mm-hmm. sure the commission can consider it. At the end of the day, though, I think that maybe, kind of takes this back to where we were before this began. AI can definitely process a whole lot of information, quantify it in ways that human beings cannot.
Can't, yeah.
We're seeing all of that across the board with our applications of AI. But at the end of the day, a human didn't make those considerations. A human didn't draw those lines. So, yeah, that's an interesting question. That's something that they've not grappled with at all yet.
Yeah, yeah. Rob, really appreciate the provocative question there. Let's go to the phones and talk with Robert in Detroit. Robert, welcome to the show.
Hi, Stephen. Thank you. Uh-huh. In terms of if I had a pen and paper and map in front of me, I would try to draw districts balanced between our different political parties to, mitigate some of the partisanship and deadlock that we see in our legislators. And if I can modify that a little bit, I would add to it that instead of race, I would look more at income and wealth, kind of echoing Martin Luther King's Poor People campaign. I think just unifying economic classes as opposed to individual races is more important than, obviously we're talking about race, because the goal is to just achieve policy for people versus policy for race. So that's my comment. And thank you.
Yeah. No, Robert, that's a really interesting insight into the process. And I love that you're choosing, nonpartisanship as, I guess, your bright line, top line approach to this. Ben, when we voted in 2018 to change this process and hand it over to a citizens commission, we also changed the priorities that we're supposed to be using for drawing these maps. And political party, which Robert is pointing to there, it moved on the list. It moved down, is my memory. But talk about how the idea of nonpartisanship, of trying to mix districts according to party, plays into the process now, and whether the commissioners are thinking about that.
It's tough to say, because I think that may be a little pettier than what they were tasked with. They are very concerned about how these the maps work on a partisan fairness standpoint. I will say, though, that early on they were advised to not try to make districts competitive, to not focus on necessarily the partisan fairness of individual districts,
right,
but rather the map as a sum total. And in order to do that, you got to build the districts according to the constitutional criteria, and then go back and see how the map looks and see what ways you could wrap in more, partisan areas into certain districts that maybe were performing a little too high for certain areas or certain political parties. So it's a weird interplay, because the focus is on the partisan fairness of the entire map, uh-huh. as opposed to just like the individual districts. So that's tough to say. In order to do that kind of blending that was mentioned, they would have to dial down and look at individual districts. And at that point, that's kind of bucking the spirit of having a map that is overall fair, as opposed to kind of cherry picking certain districts that were maybe very heavily Dem and dialing them down. Very heavily GOP and dialing them down, or vice versa, dialing them up. I think that kind of goes outside the scope of what they were initially tasked with, and I think maybe some people might have some umbrage with that if they saw them do that.
Well, and the other, I think, dynamic that you have to account for there is the way that partisan preference and things like race and geography move together, right? You know, Detroit is 80-some percent African-American or 77% African-American and overwhelmingly Democratic. It would be very hard to draw districts that would mix those Democratic voters in with Republicans. You'd have to go pretty far outside the city's borders to find communities that had substantial numbers of Republicans. And so even though partisan preference is not as much a part of these considerations, it winds up looking that way because of things like race and the history of segregation and all of these other things that define where we live and how we live.
Certainly, that goes back to the original conflict. You know, how do you make all these things work together? That was one of the biggest pieces of grappling that they had to do. And even as they, you know, have a very important focus of just working these new Detroit districts, I think that still is in a lot of commissioners' minds. There were some considerations during the remapping process of, you know, are we respecting communities of interest enough as we're redrawing these lines? Clearly, we have a very, you know, strict order that says, you know, we want to increase representation for these districts. We want to make sure that they are, you know, not being drawn with race in mind. But, you know, at the same time, how do these communities of interest that they initially considered get carved up because of that? I know a few commissioners did raise that and were concerned as they started redrawing that, you know, we're really not respecting neighborhoods. We're really not respecting, you know, some of these other racial blocks that are not, you know, African-American in Detroit. How do we accommodate for those too? So yeah, it's such a sticky wicket. It's hard to quantify the difficulty that they've, you know, put before them.
Yeah. Okay, we need to take another quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue talking with Ben Solis of Gangwon News about the redistricting process. We'll also continue hearing from you, our listeners, on the phones and on social. If you want to join, let us know how you would draw the maps here in Metro Detroit. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019, and you can also go to Twitter and add us or hashtag us, and we can include you in the show that way. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. And I'm glad you're with us. Ben Solis is our guest today. He is a reporter for Gangwon News Service. He's been following very closely the redraw effort of political lines here in Metro Detroit just ahead of the 2024 elections. A federal court said that the way those lines were drawn in 2021 violated the Constitution, and so they had to be redrawn in a kind of mad scramble, really, here just weeks before people file to run for the legislature and before people start casting their ballots for those candidates. We would love to hear from you on the phones and on social. 313-577-1019 is the number here. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag WDET, and we can work you into the conversation that way. I'd like to go back to the phones here to Tom in Berkeley. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Uh-huh. Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, well, I guess my comment is about the whole redistricting process is by going back and using race, in my opinion, as a criteria, what you're doing is you're getting away from the original purpose of redistricting, which is to eliminate gerrymandering and preventing one group from having too much of a say. I think we all realize that one of the biggest issues that we have at both the state and federal government levels is the amount of gridlock, because we cannot compromise. And I think gerrymandering actually has resulted in that. Because all the party, the person in power, all he has to do is answer to his or her constituents to get reelected.
Yeah. Tom, that's a really provocative idea, and I'm glad you called and made that point. There is this struggle that we have as Americans, I think, between dealing with history and the awful history that has kind of produced lots of dynamics in our culture, including discrimination and poverty and racism and all kinds of other things, and trying to move to a different space, right? Trying to say, okay, well, those things happened, but if we don't do something different, they will just continue to happen. And that's a very difficult balancing act, I think. And when you're drawing political maps in particular, it becomes a very difficult balancing act. Ben, in the constitutional amendment that changed the way we do this, they did try to, again, set priorities and set them in order so that the right things, quote unquote, would influence the process more than the wrong things. But as Tom points out, I think it's very difficult to walk away from the realities that we live with when you're drawing these lines. There's just not a way to ignore things that happened in the past.
Yeah, certainly. And, when you're looking to right some of those wrongs, this process was looked at as, a way to do all of that. It's tough, though, because, as you kind of noted, there are a lot of considerations, and that partisan fairness consideration, while it was one of the things that was really shopped by the supporters of this amendment and really kind of, I think, perked people's ears up, saying, I do want that. I do want these maps to be as fair and as balanced as possible, partisan wise, because I'm sick of the gridlock. That's the fourth consideration in the mm-hmm. constitutional criteria. Yeah. The other considerations are federal law, equal protection, right? The Voting Rights Act, adhering to that. And then this communities of interest piece that was baked into it. So, if the partisan fairness aspect of this was viewed as the silver bullet of fixing gerrymandering, fixing some of these racial ills that, were put forward and brought onto people because these maps were so wonky, that's a tough bet, because that partisan fairness piece is much lower on the list than those other things. Unfortunately, though, that is one of the main things that people want to see out of these maps. And I think the commission is acutely aware of that. I think that if they had their choice to go back and redraw the maps, they probably would have gone wider outside the city of Detroit. I know some commissioners started to try to do that and got reined back in and say, no, we have a really clear focus of just fixing this. Partisan fairness may be taking a back seat a bit to this redraw to fix a very specific constitutional problem.
Sure. I want to read a Twitter comment that I think is kind of a corollary to what Tom was talking about. Dragon Lady says, I guess I don't get why including race as a factor in the maps is inherently bad. Being racially conscious is not the same as being racist. Sometimes being anti-racist requires making race a consideration. There's no question, Dragon Lady, that is the spirit behind the Voting Rights Act, but it is, I think, in tension in some ways with certain interpretations of the 14th Amendment. And I think that's where we got caught up here. I think the colorblindness that a lot of people want to ascribe to the 14th Amendment is more attractive in some ways, right now at least, than the kind of affirmative activity that the Voting Rights Act kind of requires of us. Ben, I want to give you a chance to talk about what's next and what we should expect, not just here as they redraw the maps for 2024, but going forward, I've heard people talk about a possible challenge to the Senate maps in the legislature. And of course, you could challenge Congress or these other things as well. I wonder what you see as we get closer and closer to filing deadlines and voting in 2024.
Yeah, certainly. Well, in the immediate, the timeline is to have this public comment period done by the end of this month, get a working, sufficient map to the court by March. The court will then analyze that map and see if it meets muster with what they wanted them to do. If it does not, the court, which, by the way, did not have a lot of confidence that the commission could actually get this done based on all of their infighting and kind of drama that they've had since they created the last map. So they appointed a special master to start drawing a remedy house map in tandem with what the commission was doing. So if the commission fails to you know, meet the court's order, they will turn to this special master map. That master map is already turned into the court. We have not seen it. It's not on the public docket yet. Mm-hmm. We're not sure when it will become public or if it will become public at all. I'm looking into, you know, what that looks like for other states that had this process. So that's a work in progress. But, you know, no matter what they do, whether they choose the commission's map or the special master map, this has to be finalized by, as you mentioned, the April filing deadline. Once that is all done, if that all goes according to plan, because there's a lot of bumps in the road still with all of that, then they have to go back and rebuild a Detroit-based Senate map, because the Senate map was challenged as part of this lawsuit in AG v. Benson. The reason why they're not drawing the Senate map right now is because those Senate elections aren't for a couple of years.
Right. So, that's not until 26, right? Yeah.
Yes. So the priority here was to get a House map done, because part of the court's order, which was one of the bigger pieces that maybe gets glossed over, is that they barred Secretary of State Benson, Jocelyn Benson, from holding any elections with this map until this was remedied, hence the mad scramble of getting this done by the filing deadline. So if this all goes according to plan and we get past this and then we can use this new map with our elections, the commission now has to go back and then, you know, fix a Senate map. They have a little bit more time to do that.
Yeah.
But they'll have to do, you know, use the same exact kind of considerations that they used here, because the same problem existed, that they drew those Senate maps with race in mind.
And presumably the balance that they strike with this House map, whatever that is, whether it is heavily weighted toward geography or race or something else, would apply in the case of the Senate too. You'd be able to take that template, I guess, and apply it to the upper house.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, they have a lot of basal work done. It's very easy for them now probably to pivot and say, okay, well, this is what worked for us last time, or maybe this is what the court was looking for if they fail and the special master map goes forward. So they'll have a little bit more experience under their belt doing this kind of remedy mapping. You know, how long that's going to take is you know, anybody's guess, because, you know, at least this has to be ready before the 2026 elections. There was a call to have special elections for the Senate and get this done too. The court rejected that because that was just going to throw all of this into too much chaos. There was already too much focus on this House map. They wanted to give the commission a chance to breathe, but also they didn't want the state to have to carry that burden as well as far as election administration. So, you know, once we get through all of this and we have those two remedy maps, I guess we're back into the limbo that we were after the 2021 map got adopted. You know, are we going to see
someone could
new
challenge those?
Right. Yep, exactly. You know, and here's the thing is that's interesting about this is that the commission knew, the people who voted for this somewhat knew, and the people who supported this knew that this was going to be a decade-long process, not just in terms of mapping, but in the fact that all of these maps could be challenged and in various ways and struck down in various ways. And that would, require the commission to stay afloat, stay engaged, and be ready to address any remedies that needed to be
take it.
Yeah.
So, you know,
so buckle up, right?
I mean, it's exactly. This could be a decade-long roller coaster. And so we'll see how that goes. I do not think, personally, from my experience covering it, that everything is going to just go completely quiet and we're going to be hunky-dory after this is done. I expect more waves, but I guess, you know, we'll see. That's part of the process.
Yeah. Okay. Ben Solis of Gangwon News, really great to have you and your expertise with us for this discussion about redistricting. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Stephen.
Also, a note that Gangwon is now a partner of WDET's on the Mishmash podcast. Ben was a guest on that last week. You can find that podcast here at WDET and at Gangwon. That's going to do it for us on Created Equal. We'll be back tomorrow with more. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's public radio station, your connection to news, music, and conversation.